This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
From Joy 94.9, this is Saturday Magazine.
Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Paul. Morning, Fiona.
Good morning, Robert. Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here. You know, here with a couple of professionals rather than the two clowns that I'm normally saddled with.
We like to try and make a change from the sanctimonious old windbags that are normally around.
That's right.
You've got me back, so you know you haven't entirely moved away from that format. I've just come back from London last week, and on the way back, I stopped off, and a very nice young woman served me a cup of tea in the lounge. And I looked at her name tag, and it said Dolly. And I thought, oh, no.
It pursues me everywhere.
So I actually asked her if she would mind. So I took a snap of her name because I knew Macca wouldn't believe me and texted him. He said to me, steal that badge.
I just think people are following you around the world.
That might be it. Not that I'm paranoid or anything like that. No. Exactly.
So you were in London for a very good reason, obviously. You were there for a terror conference.
Yeah. Actually, counter-terror rather than terror.
Counter-terror.
Yeah. Look, it was all of the cities that have had hostile vehicle attacks. So Barcelona, Nice, Paris, ourselves, London, and also some experts from the field. And I really wanted to clock in to make sure that what we're doing here is in line with world's best practice. Mm. Because, as you know, we are installing, dare I say it, bollards around the city. I have now seen more bollard designs than I ever wanted to. but all of the other things that go with keeping people safe in a big and busy city. So I'm delighted to report that the physical infrastructure we're putting in is best in the world. Not just bollards, of course, but planter boxes and banner poles and street furniture and rubbish bins. All of those things in the Bourke Street Mall now act as preventative measures against vehicle attack. So it's not just those silver bullets everywhere. And that's really world's best practice. That's what people are doing around the world.
And they're looking very festive. So up in my way, up near Chapel Street, we've actually got the bollards actually wrapped up like Christmas presents, which looks fantastic at this time of year.
Yeah, I mean, it's like when we had the concrete blocks, isn't it? People weren't just going to leave those. So they were yarn bombed and they were graffitied and they had slogans on them. But bit by bit, you'll see more than 500 concrete blocks replaced with a more permanent treatment. But it still won't look or feel like Fortress Melbourne. We'll do it. You know, sometimes they'll be flower beds, sometimes it'll be street furniture, other times it will be bollards, but even then I hope that some of them can be designed much more like the heritage bollards that you see, for instance, outside Flinders Street Station. So a variety of treatments. There's no way that you can create some sort of ring of steel that will protect people everywhere. The thinking these days is you kind of create these sanctuaries or safe places, and then you let people know how to get to them in case of an emergency. Mm.
So picking up on that point, we were just talking about last weekend, obviously, we had the warnings of great floods and downpours of rain, which actually didn't materialise, but the SES were quite quick to send out some messages. So, what do you think in terms of the communicating with the community and what we need to do about those things?
That's actually probably something that we don't do as well, for instance, as London. And that might be because they've had 30, 40, 50 years of dealing with terror attacks, going all the way back to the IRA, of course. So they've been a lot more engaged with their community about getting a message out. Now, the message they get out is run, hide, tell. Now, it's not so much that the sort of words, it's more a signal that people know that there's now an emergency. I've got to get myself out of the area, secrete myself somewhere to keep myself safe and get on the mobile phone and tell police. And in order to educate their community, they made a YouTube clip, and they thought the best way to do it was using celebrities. So they've used, you know, soccer and rugby stars. They've used Bear Grylls and some other people who are well-known in the UK. And that YouTube clip has now been downloaded and seen 25 million times. Wow. So they're actually really educating their community, which is what we need to do, you know, to tell people not just there's danger, but to inform them about what they need to do when there is danger, whether that's a hostile vehicle attack or a weapon happen, or you know, whatever it might be.
So we should get it up on our social media site as well. We'll do that.
We should absolutely
have a look at it. It's a really, I mean, I'm not sure that run, hide, tell is the message that we will use here, but at least when people hear that, they know I've now got to act in sure. order to take responsibility for my own safety.
And that's the thing, is that people get some information that isn't necessarily accurate. And we saw in Selfridges, I think Ollie Mers sent a tweet out, you said earlier, saying that there was gunshots, which was just inaccurate, which causes panic.
Well, he's apparently got 7.8 million followers. And so it spread like wildfire. So there were people, you know, screaming through the streets, and there was a shutdown of Oxford Street, and it was
That's
all a false alarm. So social media is great and can be used as a powerful tool of communication. But I tell you what, when it goes wrong, it really goes wrong.
Joy 94.9, this is Saturday Magazine. You are here with the new co-host for the week, Paul and Fiona, and of course our special and
same
regular
tired
guest.
Old Lord Mayor. Yeah, it's me again. Here I am. Yeah, but
we like the consistency.
Yes, exactly right. You know, if I can be dull with Macca and Taz, I can be dull with you as well. Why not?
Never dull. I mean, really, is there any stories about Melbourne that are ever dull? Certainly talking about terror, counter-terrorism measures is, well, it's not dull. It's extremely important, but there has been some wonderful news that we can speak about, of course, this week, which is the incredible marriage equality final legalisation. It's obviously fabulously exciting. There was a great party in yesterday in the city.
Yep.
Dylan was there, who's panelling for us today.
I was. I saw Taz there.
You saw Taz there?
Yes.
Oh.
Well,
how was the party?
They didn't have any celebrities there.
It was good. I got myself on the news. A few Joy people got ourselves on the news.
Oh,
that was exciting.
That is good. What channel?
Channel 10.
Channel 10.
Yeah, so it was good. That it's nice to have gone to the last one, thinking that there's been 13 years of marches and we want this. And then it almost felt weird chanting, because we were sort of gloating that we got it. So
I don't think gloating is
yeah, we happen now.
I know we've said it a lot, but it will stand in history that right where we are in the centre of Melbourne was the highest yes vote in the nation, and I'm so proud of that. 84% voted yes, and that is unheard of.
But that comes with great leadership, Robert, and you've been part of that leadership as well.
Oh well, Joy too, and a number of other people. But yeah, I'm just really quite proud that was such an emphatic statement from the centre of Melbourne. And that's great. That's a message that, you know, really what we've known all along, equality is equality. So,
and also the Melbourne, not just as a great place to live by all the stats, but actually people are living and breathing what they're actually saying as well.
Yeah,
so actually
absolutely.
It is a very inclusive city and people feel comfortable here
absolutely.
And therefore that shows itself in those votes.
Yep, and that will stand forever. So now, you know, it's as if we can take a deep breath and turn around and get on with normal life.
Well, I think there were some really interesting outcomes, and Paul and I were discussing earlier that I certainly for myself, and I know numbers of other people, we became much more engaged in the political process during this debate.
Yep.
Like I was actually watching and finding out about how Parliament runs and the way that people vote and the amendments and the way that people stand up and have lots and lots and lots of long, boring speeches. I mean, I was absolutely glued to this. I was glued to Twitter. I was glued to Question Time.
Yeah.
And I think that the process has been fantastic. A lot more people have been engaged through, I mean, it started with the simple act of voting, but then watching
But Fiona, not so simple. I mean, if you look at the turnout for the vote, whether people voted yes or no, it was remarkably high, you know, and that shows you an engagement. People wanted to have their say. You know, the Australian public wished to have their view noticed on this, and they did. So from that perspective, I think it's a gigantic pat on the back. I mean, we talked about Ireland in terms of participation. We smashed what they did. So
completely. You know, I also think there's a question there that because the population actually wanted to get their voices heard, what does that mean for the politicians that didn't actually enact the will of the people that voted yes?
Look, see, I respect that. I mean, I'm disappointed because I would have thought the people spoke so emphatically that the politicians would take note of that. This is the perennial question. Are you sent to Parliament by your electorate and bound by the will of your electorate? Or are you sent to Parliament as their representative and you follow your conscience? And that's a bit of a push-pull thing. For quite a number of people, I think they may have been thinking of voting no, but in the end thought, well, if my electorate are so strong for it, then I'm going to vote yes. Others abstained. I'd rather see them doing that than voting no, but of course I'd rather see them voting yes.
It would be very interesting, I think, for our listeners to understand what it means to abstain, because it looks like fence sitting, but for some people, you know, I think the audience would love to know more about that.
Yeah, look, for some people, abstaining is a very strong statement, because they, you know, and take, you know, Tony Abbott is an example. I mean, we all know that Tony campaigned very strongly against it, but in the end, he did not vote no. Now, some people will say, well, that's at least sort of a hand across the desk to sort of shake hands on it. Other people will say, no, that's pretty spineless. And look, I guess it's up to which way you want to interpret it. But again, it was a pretty fair smashing in Parliament as well. Mm. So look, I think I regret that people were put through what was a pretty testing time.
And expensive.
And expensive. But in the end, do you know what? What it showed the Parliament was that there is no way that they could put this question off. They couldn't water it down. They couldn't find ways of weaseling out of it. The Australian people didn't just spoke. They thumped the desk with their fist. So that's good.
And for me, for next year, it just means they can get on with the act of governing and the real topics of the economy and what's happening in terms of the wider macroeconomic environment can actually be absolutely put on the table and discussed.
Well, there are certainly some major points that need to be taken care of, and you know, the issues with asylum seekers and what's happening in Manus Island. So many things.
So another hot topic that's come up again this week was citizenship, Robert. Yep. And that's now gone and affected the Labour Party. So what's your views on that?
Isn't this just chaos? Isn't it just absolute chaos? And, you know, I feel like we're a bit of a laughingstock worldwide. I mean, this is really, really clear stuff. And whether you agree or you do not agree with Section 44 of the Constitution, nevertheless, it is there. Mm. And I tell you what, I bet if you put it to a referendum, Australians would say, no, leave it right there, thank you. It's pretty easy to know. Was I born in another country? Were my parents born in another country? Were my grandparents born in another country? And therefore, you know, have I the likelihood of dual citizenship? And do something about it. And it's not as if you can actually nominate for Parliament, federal Parliament, that is, and just leave it as a silent question. You actually have to affirm that you are not the citizen of another country.
Well, surely the whole vetting process that Bill Shorten talked about, actually, obviously just hasn't materialised. And how on earth could those politicians sit there knowing there's a potential skeleton in their cupboard that they haven't actually declared?
But look, sometimes it's a funny thing. And, you know, maybe the answer to this is not to change the Constitution, but to change the Citizenship Act, to say that when you are an Australian citizen, then for the purposes of, you know, Parliament, then
you renounce
your So, you know, without other countries making you a citizen without your knowledge or against your will. So, for instance, look, and Tass and I were talking about it last time I was here, because Tass, of course, is of Greek heritage.
Used to be, actually. I think he's renounced that.
That's right, he's renounced his Greek heritage.
Well, he can renounce his Greek heritage, that's fine. But the point was, if he were a slightly younger man and he went back to Greece, he would still be forced to do military service.
Indeed.
So you don't actually get a choice in those things. So, you know, sometimes even when you renounce and it is against your will, the country of origin has different ideas from you. And they're the things that have to be cleared up. And we can't kind of go country to country working out what it is. So we need an Australian solution. And I would have thought the Citizenship Act is the mechanism to do that. You know, by the way, I don't mind that if you are a member of the Australian Parliament, the only national allegiance you have is to Australia. That doesn't mean you don't have a different and rich cultural heritage. Of course you can, and you should. That should be reflected in our Parliament. But I don't mind that for federal Parliament that you must be solely an Australian citizen. I think that's a fair thing.
And, of course, we haven't seen the end of it just yet. I mean, that's the thing. It is going to drag on.
Yeah, and on and on and on. And, look, it's just agony, as I say. I find the whole thing quite embarrassing. You know, and it's just one of those things where you think to yourself, well, okay, there was quite an assiduous barrister who followed the rabbit down the burrow this time, but that's for this Parliament. What does it say about all the parliaments that went before?
Yeah.
Because don't tell me that they would be any different from this. It's just that the questions come up now.
It's never been asked before, you're right.
No, so...
And you could undo a whole history of decisions that have been made by people who probably shouldn't be there.
Well, you know, I just think we need a fix for this. It doesn't reflect very well on any political party or independent that we haven't done such a basic thing as make sure that you are solely an Australian citizen to sit in the federal parliament. But look, I don't like to dwell on things that are embarrassing, and I find this whole thing embarrassing.
Well, we don't know what's going to happen to make that all end. It would be a drag to have to be talking about this again in 2018 when there is so much else to do.
As indeed the Marriage Act again.
I think people are focused on citizenship now. I don't think we'll be having this conversation again. Certainly political parties will be focused on it. But look, I went through this in 2002. I had a member of parliament who, through sort of internal wrangling and wanting a particular seat, had enrolled in a seat and was not living there, and because his enrolment confirmation was sent to that bogus address three times, he was struck off the electoral roll, and therefore not only could he not vote at that state election, he couldn't stand as a candidate at that state election, which, you know, led to an absolute smashing in the polls. So I'm really glad I brought that up, actually. That's just reminded me of, you know, one of the low lights of my career. But anyway,
let's move swiftly on then.
let's move on.
So what do you think of the main things that are coming out post-Christmas then? What are they going to, politicians really going to start to work on the minute they come back from their summer breaks?
By the way, it's always hilarious to watch Parliament when they come back from their summer break, because they're all self-consciously sitting there in their brand new shirts and brand new ties that they've been given for Christmas. Just can I give you the tip? When you look at the Parliament, 80% of them will be wearing new ties, many of them in highly questionable taste, but that's a different issue. Look, I think you said it before, Paul. I think they've got to get back to the things that matter to people, you know, making sure that we have job security. I've never believed the sort of unemployment figures that are official. Most countries cheat. They, you know, the real unemployment figure out there, particularly among young people, is much higher than the published official rate. And in some pockets of our city and our state, you know, very much higher. You know, one in four people, one in five people not working or underemployed. And I think that's one of the crucial things, that federal governments and state governments and city governments have got to be generating economic activity so that people have employment, so that they can make choices in their own lives. So get back to the economy. I think safety and security is an important thing to us, and we want to feel safe and secure in our country. Healthcare remains very important. We had the voluntary assisted dying bill here in Victoria. I've been actually asked to look by the government at the other side of that, at palliative care, and I'll be really pleased to do that. But I think healthcare is, you know, one of the things at the top of the list. I still worry about people who are really vulnerable, like the homeless people that we see on the streets, but young people in particular. You know, the rising demographic of older women who are falling into homelessness, that's a worry. I think that needs to be addressed. And I think one of the other things that we need to look at again is education. You know, just it's not rocket surgery, as my dear daughter would say. These are the things that actually matter in people's lives and that make a difference to them. So, yeah, let's get back to basics. And if you move too far away from that to the periphery, then no wonder Parliament becomes less and less pertinent and relevant to people.
Fantastic. Just a quick message. We've had a couple of messages coming in, but just one that's caught my eye. It's from Macca. He's over in Hong Kong at the moment. He said it's a little bit weird listening in, but he says, hello, Dolly. And well done, you know, to Fiona and Paul there.
We got 27 minutes into the program without me being called Dolly. So thanks, Macca. That's just great.
We'll get the name back coming soon. Yeah.
And we also have a message from one of our regulars, Melina. She's asked, how many wedding invitations have you been invited? How many wedding invitations have you received yet?
None, because I think today is the first day that you can lodge a notice of intention. So I hope to see lots of them at Town Hall. I think that'd be absolutely
wonderful.
I think
the Town Hall's a wonderful location.
If you think about it, I mean, I really would say to people, if you love this city as I do, one of the great spots is the portico, the balcony at Town Hall. You look up and down that beautiful Swanson Street, and it's a magical view. And you also have the benefit of knowing the Queen has stood there before you, the Beatles have stood there before you, ABBA have stood there before you.
That's a great sales pitch. But also, in a previous show, Robert, I'm sure you said you would consider being a celebrant. If someone wanted to get married in that portico with you as the celebrant, would that be a potential option?
Absolutely. And I've looked at it. There are a couple of things. By the way, they don't make it easy for you to be a celebrant. You have to get a cert for, which is not difficult to do, but all of the stuff in there says there are X numbers of weddings a year and X numbers of celebrants. Don't go into this lightly. So they're actually saying there's not much work around. But there's a big thing that I'm finding out, and that is, as Lord Mayor, do I have a conflict of interest? And if you do, then you can't be a celebrant for people. So I'm just checking out whether being Lord Mayor means that I could or would be banned from doing ceremonies at Town Hall. I think it'll be all right. But yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to do it and say I want to be here to welcome you to marriage at the centre of our city.
I think
it'd
be a great honour getting married by you guys.
I'll even frock up. How about that? I'll put on the robe and chains.
With the big hat.
With the bicorn, I could put them.
Exactly.
No, I'm only... Well, hang on. I'm not being rude.
You're allowed to wear it?
Only in the presence of a queen. So I might be okay after all.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.